culture is in this imperial groove. A country with armies of refugees drafted to serve the plutocracy. After invading Canada and Mexico, the empire went where it could go, killing millions in Laos and Vietnam. They covered Korea in napalm.
You tell.
It's a democratic kind of inquisition. A crusade for playing by the rules, by bombing gyms and bombing schools. Hundreds of girls in their uniforms, 35 years after Desert Storm, still determining the world's fate, the United States.
Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, Cuban authorities agree meetings were held April 10th with a U.S. delegation in Havana. Accounts of what transpired in those meetings differ between the two parties, but it seems there will be further discussions. The news comes as the nation continues to suffer the privations of a U.S. oil embargo laid atop the decades-long sanctions campaign waged by the Americans to reverse Cuba's popular revolution. Randy Caravaggio is a longtime organizer with the Victoria Friends of Cuba, a group working to aid the embattled Caribbean island nation with medical and other necessary supplies. It's a mission never more vital than now. Welcome back to the program, Randy.
Hi, Chris, and everyone else. Great to be here.
Well, it's great to have you again, Randy. Well, American adjacent media report there was a two-week ultimatum issued to Cuba by the U.S. at their meetings held April 10th. The Cuban government denies this, saying meetings were, quote, respectful and professional and without conditions. But President Miguel Díaz-Canel did say Cuba will, quote, not accept external interference in its affairs. What, Randy, have you heard from your friends and contacts in Cuba about this meeting?
Well, there's not much news about it. Obviously, it was private, and I guess it's ongoing. Cuban authorities have always held different meetings with the states in regards to specific issues. Of course, now because they blockaded all oil going into Cuba, that's what the biggest issue is at this point. So we don't really know what's taking place in the background, just like it is in other countries like Iran, for instance. You know, they were going to meet, then they weren't going to meet, and we don't know the exact issues that's going on. But historically, we have witnessed over the 65 years what the United States has tried to do with Cuba, and that is eliminate the so-called regime there. And that's just not going to happen. From all the people that we've talked to when we were there in January and February, and the response that we get daily from our friends there, they're just not going to roll over so that the United States can invade and do whatever they want. It's just not going to happen.
Well, we know this is the Trump style, is to make big threats and try to freak people out. The so-called two-week ultimatum would come due in a couple days' time. Trump has also said a few days ago that, I might just go and invade them once I'm finished with this other matter, meaning Iran, like once he dusts his hands of the Iranian situation, which I don't know, might be a little bit deeper than he anticipates. But what are your friends in Cuba saying? What are the conditions now? Because the what's going on in Iran has sort of shaded everything else for the moment, mm-hmm. It seems. The last we heard, things were dire in Cuba. Has there been any improvement since some oil was allowed to land? And
Well, the blackouts, I mean, they were fairly long, and it was national-wise. It's a little bit better, but it's not a whole lot better. I mean, they're suffering the consequences of not having oil coming in. There's been all kinds of shipments of goods from Mexico, from solidarity groups all over the world. There's another one just going now from Europe, bringing all kinds of humanitarian aid. We in Canada have also sent a number of containers with solar generators and stuff. It's a trickle of the much needed stuff that they need, but things are very hard. There's no question about it. The prices have gone up. The blackouts are still continuing. But the last 65 years, I mean, Cuba has had to reinvent the wheel almost every few years, because as soon as they would come up with something, that they could eliminate the regressive and abuse from the United States, then the United States would impose something else in front of them, and they had to go around it again. And so that's a continual thing. And I think that's what keeps the revolution actually happening, is that they've been able to come up with different innovative ways to go ahead. And it's been a struggle. It's been a total constant struggle. I remember reading about the first years of the revolution, and Fidel said, having this revolution was very, very difficult. We lost many, many people. There was a lot of suffering. He said, now that the revolution is won, it's going to be even harder. And I think that's the situation that's continuing,
Well, I just got off the phone, Randy, a few minutes ago with Ricardo Vosch. He's a reporter, a journalist in Venezuela, talking about the reversals there. And it seems the price exacted by America and its corporate rulers is pretty severe. Do you have any indication how the people in Cuba are receiving the situation in Venezuela, despite, I mean, except not getting any energy from them as they're well used to?
Well, it's tough, and the Cubans know that, the only ones that's going to be in charge of what's going to happen is going to be the Cubans. Obviously, Venezuela was shipping all kinds of oil there. There's still some 20,000 Cuban doctors in Venezuela, and Venezuela, before it was oil, well, now I'm sure they're paying, with something else. And then, of course, Russia had sent a shipload of oil not so long ago, but that's only for 10 days. In Venezuela, things are tough, just like it is everywhere else. And Trump just—I mean, you can't trust this person any longer. This guy's a criminal. I should be in jail. And he's threatening, bullying every country in the world. And of course, Cuba doesn't have any resources. It's only a very small island. It's only 90 miles away from the States. I believe that Cuba, is really, I don't believe in miracle, but really, if there was such a thing, Cuba being able to survive this long is definitely a miracle. And I think that's what the States is all about, is that whenever they see any countries trying to do something different than what their system is, any progress, they have to eliminate it so that they can say, our system is the best, we are in control, and no one else has the situation. Just today, actually, I got an article right in front of me, and the Cuban representative to the United Nations basically stated, they keep saying that our system doesn't work. Well, then why impose these blockades if they don't work? Just let them fall by themselves, But it does. And Venezuela is the same thing. I mean, Venezuela did remarkable, incredible things in the last some 20, 25 years since Chavez, was in power. And they're just, blockades after blockades. They try to destroy people, makes people suffer, make the economy grind down to a halt. And then, they say it doesn't work. Well, that's all baloney, because those, when you get teachers teaching children, when you get doctors healing people, I mean, Cuba has exported 200,000 doctors in the last 65 years, saving all kinds of bloody tens of millions of people all around the world. And it doesn't work. I think it does work,
Well, it depends on what you want, what work means for you. And if it means extracting the maximum amount of profit for, you know, corporate interests, then the Cuban model and the Venezuelan model clearly doesn't work and must not be adopted by anybody else.
But you see, that's you know, this is the thing about it, is that the overwhelming majority of human beings around the world needs what these revolutions have given to people. So it's the dictatorship of the United States that's lying constantly to make people believe that, you know, their system is great. Well, you know, I mean, even in Canada, we hardly have I don't have a doctor. I don't have a family doctor. Most of my friends don't have family doctors. Well, Cuba is exporting doctors. So what I would like to know, what doesn't work?
Yeah, well, this is it. You know, if those people need that stuff so bad, they should be willing to pay for it instead of watching baseball games and drinking beer. They should use their money to pay. You know, that's the way it is. Well, the president, Diaz-Canel, he says, quote, "The moment is extremely challenging." This is in regards to Trump's promise to stop by Cuba after we finish with Iran. But he says the moment is extremely challenging and calls upon us once again, as on April 16th, 1961, to be ready to confront serious threats, including military aggression. That date, October 1961, being pertinent. Why?
Well, you know, the Bay of Pigs happened there that day, and that was the first event that happened that basically the United States failed in their military invasion. That was the first invasion in the Americas that they failed. Within actually under 72 hours, they defeated the mercenaries that at that time it was President Kennedy that was supporting it, after Eisenhower basically staged the whole affair, and then Kennedy continued. But within about 72 hours, they were arrested, put in jail, and then they were given back to the United States for baby powder and all kinds of other goods that people needed it. And so I think a little country like that, to be able to show to the world that a little David can do a whole lot of damage to the Goliath is incredible, you know.
Well, now, as you say, there's not much news on the Cuban side about what happened and what was said in the meetings that they recently held. The Americans haven't been so circumspect. They say they've made their demands known. They say they want economic liberalization, expanded political freedoms, compensation for property lost during the revolution, and investment reforms. And they also want the release of what they call the political prisoners in Cuba from the San Isidro movement. They name a couple of those individuals. What is the San Isidro movement? Can you remind us?
Well, the San Isidro's movement was a cultural movement within Havana, in a certain area of Havana. And basically they received thousands and thousands of dollars from the CIA and the American embassy in Cuba. And they, a few years ago, they did demonstrations against the government and so on and so forth. They could never, you know, swing that many people to support them. They just, you know, basically count on the Western media to go in there, take shots of them doing some kind of stupid demonstration. And then, of course, you know, not that long ago, a person who came to one of our events, he says, "Well, what about political prisoners in Cuba?" And I said, "Well, you know, it's a bit funny, because all the prisoners in Cuba, they're all political prisoners. All the prisoners in the States, well, of course, they're all criminals." But I said, "It's not exactly that way." I said, "In any countries, if you can have any ideas you want, in Cuba, you are free to talk and to share and to believe in whatever you want. But the fact is that once you start breaking laws, it doesn't matter if it's in Cuba or in the States or in Canada, then, of course, the law comes onto you. And if you broke the law, you end up either in jail, then you go, you know, in front of the court, and they figure out what's going on. And if you did bad, they give you years of jail. That's what's happening. But the Western media and the United States always goes in there, picks up on some people that have gone to jail for whatever reason, And they automatically become political prisoners, especially when they're paid. And of course, they go along with it. This is not new. This is, you know, since the beginning of the revolution, this has happened. And it's going to continue, obviously. But the fact is that the overwhelming majority of Cubans, they have shown to the world over and over and over again by the millions. When they, you know, May Day, you're going to see millions of people in Havana supporting their revolution. They did not too long ago against the blockade against the oil. They've been demonstrating almost daily, groups of people all over the place. And they also go in elections. It's not a dictatorship, as we're told. You know, the last, I think, election was 78% went to vote. So, you know, I don't know what this is all about. But, I mean, the thing is that they can't go in there and start giving money to some political opposition where they can just take over the system. It's just not going to happen. And that's what they hate the most, because it starts from bottom up. We have from top down in our elections. The parties choose who they're going to run, and then you vote for your MP. In Cuba, that doesn't exist. In Cuba, everyone is given so much money, which is like around $100 or something. Anyone can be nominated. You don't have to be in the Communist Party to be nominated. There are religious people. There are people that have nothing to do with anything government. They just come from their communities. They're either involved in the union or in the women organizations, and they are nominated, and people know who they are, and that's how the vote system goes. And then from those people that are elected from a municipal area, they go on to the People's Assembly, and they vote for whoever's going to rule the country and everything. Fidel had to be elected, Raul had to be elected, and Díaz-Canel has to be elected. So to me, we've been there enough times to have been able to witness that a democratic system does exist in Cuba way, way more than what we see right here at home. I hate to tell you guys, but it is like that.
Well, and people here know that instinctively, if they don't admit it anyway, with our dismal turnouts and the holding of noses every time there's an election. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm talking today with Randy Caravaggio. Randy's a longtime organizer with the Victoria Friends of Cuba. It's a group working to aid the embattled Caribbean island nation, working for, what is it, Randy, 30 something
it's,
years?
It's since 1992 we've been around. Yeah.
92, yeah, there you go. And they are mounting another operation. Before we get to that, though, Randy, this thing with the color revolution, I guess what we would call it, this was the San Ysidro movement that now is a condition of the talks, according to the Americans at least, of 2021. They tried this color revolution. They also tried, as I remember, introducing cell phone technology, and I've forgotten the name of the app, but there was some kind of app that
was
they...
Zoom Zoom. They called it Zoom Zoom.
Right,
and,
right.
Yeah. They were trying to basically make believe that there were, you know, millions of people in Cuba trying to defeat the government, which was all, you know, a made up thing.
Well, and now another of the U.S. demands appended, I guess, is that Cuba allow Elon Musk into the country with his Starlink. We've seen these Starlink everywhere. There's a revolution, color revolution, or war to be, or invasion to be. We see Elon Musk somehow is ahead of the wave, and these little Starlink devices land upon those that will be bombed later.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't know what that's about. I you know, I haven't heard anything about him, you know, getting into any details into the you know, Cuba. But you know, the Cubans, they are very clear. They're going to be masters of their own home, and they're not going to give that up. They're not against technology. They're not against internet. They're not against the United States sitting with them. You know, you mentioned before, you know, they want back the land that they, or that they want to get paid for the land that was nationalized in 1961. Well, the thing is that Canada sat with the Cuban government, Spain sat with the Cuban government, Mexico sat with the Cuban governments. They owned assets there. They all got repaid. They all came to a peaceful conclusion. The United States had a seat there. They didn't want to sit there. They just, that's the thing. You know, in Chile, when they nationalized the Anaconda Mining Company, which was owned by the United States, Chile was willing to sit with them and say, okay, how much is this thing exactly worth? You know, the problem with the United States is that they go to these countries, small countries, they dictate on how they're going to handle the situation. In a lot of cases, they make hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars, and they hardly pay any taxes on them. And then when maybe a nationalist government comes in and nationalizes those assets, they claim that it's worth so much, much more than they ever pay taxes on. And that doesn't work because those countries says, well, you haven't been paying taxes for the last 20, 30 years, and you're saying it's worth this much for the last 20, 30 years, but now you sit down and you're saying that it's worth 100 times more. It doesn't work that way. You see, that's what they usually do.
Well,
And then, of course,
and projected earnings too. And this we saw with these trade agreements that were so vociferously opposed at the turn of the century, where they say, well, if you take this away, we would have made zillions. So now you're on the hook to give us the money that we could have, would have, should have made.
Well, you know, it's an insane situation that sometimes we witness here. Only a few years ago, Vietnam, who's on the other side of the world, who had nothing to do, you know, United States had nothing to do with going over there bombing and killing people all over the place. And a number of years ago, I think it was 10 years ago, Vietnam had to repay for war reparation to the United States so that the United States could get rid of the blockade that they had against Vietnam. I mean, it's so ridiculous that is insane. You know, with the and now you have a Trump, a total criminal that should be in jail. Dictating to the world on how we're going to live and what we're going to have and what we can do and what we can't do. That's and you know, and Cuba has been, I think, at the forefront, you know, of a movement of a country that says, look, this is a wrong thing to do. We are masters of our own home, and we're going to, you know, if we have to lose blood over it, we will. And they still stand on that stand. They're saying that they're not going to just give that up. It's their country. They have every right. They're following every international law that exists. And at the same time, the United States is breaking each and every of those international laws that they actually signed and agreed to begin with, and now they are breaking each and every one of them, going to places, kidnapping people, killing people, starting war. It's an insane situation.
Yeah, well, business as usual, I think, is what it would be called. As far as and Iran too, they're saying that they owe the Americans reparations for something. I'm not, for the bomb, for the bombs that they've dropped, I suppose. Is there any indication now? Mexico was standing pretty firm, more firm than most, than almost anyone, I think, in saying that they were not only going to deliver aid, goods and such to Cuba, but also oil as well. I haven't heard anything more about that. Did Mexico make good on that intention to start sending oil to Cuba?
According to Sheinbaum, the president, she's still dealing with the United States, saying that they are eventually going to allow or make sure that oil from Mexico goes to there. As a matter of fact, just last weekend, 3 days, 4 days ago, I think it was Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, there was a big convention in Spain where progressive governments came together, and there was Colombia there was Mexico, there was Brazil, there was a number of organized or governments, and basically Brazil, Mexico, and Spain are forming some kind of a group, I guess you'd call it, where basically they're going to try to do something in regards to in support of Cuba. And I think that's what it takes. I don't think that just one country alone can do it, because there's so much threat against them when they do that from the United States that it's hard to do. But I think if there's a coalition of country saying, no, we're not going to take this, I think that's where they really, really stand a good chance to say, no, we're going to go in there, and that's all there's to it. You know, I mean, with Russia, I don't know how they've been, you know, I know that they were dealing with the United States, and they've told them we're going to send a shipment of oil there, and now they're preparing to send another one. But you know, we really don't know what goes on behind the scene. But I do believe that, you know, if you're going to have any kinds of strength, you have to unite with other countries. And I think that's what Mexico is trying to do. But Mexico has been shipping goods. They haven't been able to ship oil for, I think, 3 months ago. But they have been hundreds of thousands of tons of goods. And as I said before, solidarity organizations. I know it's drops in the bucket, but the fact is, when different organizations and governments do things like that, it just gives strength to basically the Cubans, because they don't feel alone, and it puts an example throughout the world that you know, what the United States is doing is totally insane.
Well, Randy, we don't have much time left. So before we go, Victoria Friends of Cuba, you mentioned you were in Cuba not too long ago. Now we've got the whole world upside down even more than usual because of the situation in Iran with the Americans and so on. What are you guys doing, and how do you plan on getting your next shipment to Cuba?
The support that we received since we came back in January has been the most we've ever seen. We were on the bridge on top of the highway there, Pat Bay Highway there, last weekend, and we counted 100 cars at a time, and there was 30-40% of them that were actually honking. I mean, the support is incredible. We've held a number of events where we raised spectacular funds in order to buy goods to send to Cuba. So basically what we do, we belong to the Canadian Network on Cuba that also has another 25 or 27 organizations across Canada in solidarity with Cuba. And all of us across Canada do all kinds of different events and fundraising and educational events. And we raise funds and we send the money to Toronto, where they buy different goods and put it in a container. It goes to Halifax, and then from Halifax goes to Cuba. The last container was full of solar generators. The next one will be of medicine and food supplies. So I think there's been four containers, 40-foot containers gone since this year, and there's going to be at least another four going very soon. So we are an ongoing, we know that doesn't matter what we do now, it's going to be a long-term thing. Like I said, we've been around for 1992, and it's going to continue for a long time, because Cuba, we have to remember, does not have oil, does not have diamonds, does not have gold. You know, I mean, it hardly has any resources, and it's a small island in the middle of nowhere where basically the United States overshadows it. So it's very, very tough for them to be able to survive on their own. So they need to deal with other countries, and that's where the United States and the blockade came in and basically stopped all that, to basically strangle it. But Cuba is not strangled, and I believe, among so many other millions of people across the world that are in solidarity with Cuba, we don't believe that Cuba is going to collapse very soon. It's going to stay for a long time. And the reason is not because they have military power, but because they have human power. They have education, they have health care, and they share it with the rest of the world. And we have to continue to be in solidarity with them, and we have to continue to help them as neighbors.
Well, as the old literature saw goes, no man is an island, but some nations are islands, but no island nation is entirely alone. And that's what America would have Cuba be, entirely alone. Even America and China and everyone else needs other nations to trade with to prosper. Right. Nobody can stand on their own. It's ridiculous to think otherwise. Randy, how do people find you and get involved?
It's very, very simple. Please go to our website. If you put Victoria Friends of Cuba, it'll bring you right on Google there to the website. Go in there and it'll tell you who we are, what we do, when we do it. We have events pretty much almost every week now. We collect funds. Anyone can send us e-transferred with our email. And it's, again, VictoriaFriendsOfCuba@gmail.com. Anyone can send us money through that. And I have to say that 100% of all the pennies that we get goes straight to Cuba. We are all volunteers, and there is no money going organizationally. So 100% goes to Cuba.
Well, thanks a lot, Randy, for all you do and coming on again to talk about it today. Thanks to Ricardo Vosch down there in Venezuela. That's all the time I have for this week. Until the next time. Thanks, Randy.
Thank you so much, Chris.